Hello, Praxis listeners. You're listening to a special podcast-only recording of an interview with a guy I've known for a few years now, a big activist in Spokane. He's done a lot of different things with a very updated from the last Standing Rock show I did, update from Standing Rock Reservation from the Sacred Stone Camp there as they go through really day by day, hour by hour, major shifts. So Ziggy, who I'm with in the studio, offered to give some updates on that and actually doesn't have a choice but to give us all updates about it the way he tells it. So do you mind just introducing yourself and talk a little bit briefly about how you came to be an activist and then how you came to be reaching out and working with the tribes that are gathered at Standing Rock right now?
Okay. You know, my name's Ziggy. I've been an activist for in recent years, for about the last 5-6 years after I got re-involved. I've been a pretty big activist in my younger years and had gotten out for a while because of marriage, a few other things. So I've been more involved. I got involved with the Standing Rock. The full story on that is when I was younger, about 25 years ago, I had a series of dreams that lasted over 5 years. It was the same dream every couple weeks. I would see a Native American man speaking to me. I could only understand the words Oglala, and then he would sing me a song, and for years I just didn't understand what it was. The final dream I had, he had finally spoke to me in English and said it just wasn't time yet. So when my friend Terry called me up one day and said, "Have you seen what's happening at Standing Rock?" And I said, "Where's Standing Rock?" And he goes, "It's on the Lakota Reservation." And I knew I had to go. I left within less than 24 hours, headed to Standing Rock. Spent 1 week there, got meet a lot of people. It was in the second week where I found out I was in the right place. We had a big prayer circle on the ninth, the day the one decision was coming through, and a new Oglala medicine man showed up for the sunrise prayer circle, and he sang the song I'd heard in my dreams for years, so I knew I was in the right spot.
Wow.
So I've stayed involved, and I've gone 5 times, and I will be going back as soon as I can.
Wow, that's incredible. And can you, I think listeners have heard the basics of what's going on, but can you kind of summarize for people who maybe don't know what we're referring to when we refer to the camp?
Well, as of now, on Sunday, the elders decided that they were going to claim eminent domain on the piece of land where the pipeline's supposed to go through, on the east side of Highway 1806. Most of us who showed up that morning had no idea that was the plan. They just announced it to us, and we crossed the road, took down the fences, and had a village set up within a real short period of time. By the end of the day, we had numerous teepees, tents, medical tent, pretty much everything we needed to sustain the camp within just a few hours. They're holding the camp right now. I just got reports just within the last few minutes that the police were trying to come in and take it, but our roadblocks were holding, and our camp is safe at the moment. So anybody out there who has the ability, they need people there who are willing to stay on that piece of land and hold it down. It's basically a direct action 24/7. You being there, whether you're awake or asleep, you're constantly in the middle of a direct action. It's very important right now. That was the two things I was asked when I left by the some of the organizers, was to get the story out there of what's been happening and to tell people, if you can make it, get there as soon as you can.
Sure. So if you haven't listened to the first show on the same topic, I would suggest that you pause, do that, listen to this one, and then go if you can. I can do a call to action because this isn't getting broadcast on the radio. So go there, as Ziggy said. And so this is in protest and in blockage of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is basically the Keystone XL pipeline, which we heard a lot about rerouted because people didn't, the Keystone got overruled, and the Dakota Access Pipeline basically reroutes the same pipeline infrastructure through native lands in violation of treaties and in violation of common sense and human decency. And people have gathered from over 300 tribes along with, you know, white allies, Black Lives Matter, solidarity people, different groups from around the country and around the world have rallied at this spot to camp out and protest it and to interrupt construction and also just to kind of pray together. But can you talk a little bit about that, about the direct action as part of the continuum of this being a prayer-based gathering?
Yeah, the entire day we're in ceremony. We start out our days with prayers at dawn. We have our sunrise ceremonies, and we have ceremonies throughout the day. Every protection event we do begins with prayer and ends with prayer. And you know, there's lots. You know, there's no alcohol, no drugs, no guns. None of that is allowed on site. If anybody's caught with any of those, they're asked to leave, and they send them on their way, and they can return if they agree to not bring any of those things in. I mainly came to talk about the events of last Saturday.
Sure.
Because I was standing on the front line when we went out to have our prayer circle in support of our friends, our brothers and sisters who had locked down to the machines. And we had to walk out, I don't know, I think it was probably 4 to 5 miles. And there were so many people willing to do that at 5 in the morning. They got up at 5 in the morning, turned out. We walked in. There were old people, kids, guy on crutches. I can't believe that he was able to do that many miles, but he was determined to be there. As we got closer to the site, we got the report that they had got in and were blockading us off, so we flanked and we went around to the right side and went down the hills, crossed the creek to try and reach our friends. They eventually managed to get ahead of us and cordon us off. They had, like, I don't even know how many cops. There were a lot of them, their military gear, their military vehicles with the sound cannons. And so they lined up. I was locked in the front line with numerous others. I have no idea how many there were. But the last I saw before they decided to charge in on us was the head police officer going down the line, yelling to each officer. I hope I can say this, but because I want to use his exact words. He says, "I want you to take every one of these bastards down. None of them get out." And shortly after that, they charged in, and they were selectively grabbing people from the front lines, and everyone I could see within my range, all they took were Native Americans. They didn't grab any of the white people around me whatsoever. They just started grabbing Native Americans. And after they grabbed the ones they decided to choose, they started, you know, shoving us in the face or the chest with their billy clubs and trying to push us back. And we were trying to back off as well as we could. Our warrior friends who were selected to be arrested were trying to keep us safe. A couple of them we actually tried to hold back, and he said, the one guy closest to me said, "No, I'm willing to go. You guys get yourself safe." So we backed off. We started heading back toward the main road. We got maybe a half mile before the police had regrouped and gotten back ahead of us, and they started surrounding us. We got in a big circle with and at that time, when it was clear they were going to come in and try and get people, some of the women were saying, "You know, we have children in here. Please let us get the children out before you do anything." And their reaction was to rush in with their large mace canisters and just started macing everybody, including the children, the elders. the way they came in, I was about halfway back on the big circle. They sort of split us in two. They came from my right side, spraying gas. I leaned to the left and covered my head with my coat. And when I looked back around, me and the guy right ahead of me had been split off from the front of the crowd by the police officers. They just pushed us back and separated the circle into two. So we backed off. The front group all sat down so they could just, you know, they knew they were going to be arrested, and yet they still managed to break the wrist of a young girl, broke a woman's leg, even though they were being peaceful and just sitting down. One of the people from the press was trying to film the violence that the police were creating there, and three cops just rushed in and tackled her and confiscated her stuff to not allow the footage to get out. So they're trying to block anything of what's really going on there from being seen. One of my friends did get the film of the woman being, the press person being tackled, and we sent him out as quick as possible. We told him, get out, get that posted. So I'm hoping it's out there. I'm never on a computer, so I wouldn't see it. But so after our group was separated, we flanked around to the right to try and make it to the creek to escape from the police officers, because most of them were busy arresting the large group. We made it across the creek, up the hill to the back to the road, and were trying to head out. The group had gotten spread out. There was maybe a large group in front, a lot of us straggling behind because there were elders that were needing help. And between where I was originally and the very back group where people were walking with elders, we saw the cops start coming over the hills, because, you know, these rolling hills, and they would come down to where two people would be walking with an elder, and the cops would just come up behind them, grab the two young people by the neck and toss them down and leave the elder on their own, and they would just keep trying to move forward. And if any other young person was to try and go back and help that elder, they would also get tackled. And they just kept moving up the line. They were getting closer to the people I was with when finally our group started bringing in trucks with our warriors, and they were able to stand off the cops, load up our elders, and then once we had the elders going back on trucks and horses, the horse people on horses were taken out. They were just pulling them up on the horses and taking them out as quick as they could. So once the elders were cleared, the rest of us were told to just get out as quick as we could, and we just tried to move as fast as we could to the highway. And when I reached the highway, pretty much absolutely every friend I'd went in with that day was missing, because we lost a lot of them. So it was a really sad afternoon. But
lost to arrest.
Lost
correct.
To arrest, yeah.
Okay.
When I talked to them after they had, a couple of them had been released from jail. The one had been with this one older woman who had brought her medications just in case she had gotten arrested. They tossed her medications, and so she didn't have... she ended up sick, and their way of taking care of her was to just throw her in a cell by herself and not give her medical care. So they were not allowing people medical care. They arrested our medics when people were maced, and our medics moved in to try and help our people. They arrested the medics. So it was just, I've never seen such evil from people before. Those cops are not human.
So, yeah, that's really overwhelming, and I'm not sure where to start. But so it seemed to you, so you said that the Native people there were being targeted for arrest primarily, but then also medics, media, people who have special roles. Would you say it's safe to say that the police representing the interest of the pipeline company are just attempting to pull the whole thing apart at this point?
Yeah, that's what they were attempting. And by the afternoon, when we got the rest of us got back to camp, and we had they held some wonderful ceremonies for us to try and make us feel better, but we were, a lot of us were pretty down that afternoon because we, I know our, when I talk to my friends in Red Warrior Camp, they go, we lost almost everybody. We got like five or six of us left in our kitchen crew, and that's it. But the elders and the people from the Lakota tribe had this plan for the next morning, and when they decided to take over that land, it just re-energized us, mm-hmm. and we're probably stronger than we ever were before. So if they thought they were going to do damage by trying to take that many of our people, they made the wrong choice, mm-hmm. because they just strengthened us.
Yeah. And does moving the camp also, I know there were some issues with the original campsite with winter coming, with it being on a floodplain and being kind of the snow there. I mean, I can't imagine what winter's going to be like. So does this move solve some of those problems too?
Yeah, we won't be in a floodplain. We're on high ground. It'll be safe for winter. It'll be easier to get in and out. It's easier for our the warriors that watch over us, the security, to keep our people safe. So we're going to be able to start putting up more permanent winterized structures that will sustain the people, even in the, because I've been there on a few pretty cold days, but you get 20 degrees and high winds, it can be pretty hard to take, mm-hmm. but and it's going to be worse as the winter goes on, so people have to be prepared for that. But everybody's doing what's necessary to hold down the location. The plan is to have a permanent village on that site. So.
Wow. So what do you think people don't know about this camp and about this resistance to the pipeline that they should?
Well, I've ran into a lot of people, you know, mostly my white friends, that don't think they're supposed to be there, that this is, it's led by the Native Americans, but they want the allies there. So just because you're white doesn't mean they don't want you there. They treat you like family when you show up. As long as you're willing to be there, help them hold the line. If you don't feel safe in the main camp because you could be raided at any time, you can be in the original camp and help with taking care of the families that stay there. You can work in the kitchen. You can chop wood. There's numerous jobs.
I've heard there's a school. There's a lot of needs.
Yeah, there's a school, which I'm sure the school will be staying on the original site and not moving, because it's on high ground at the original site, so it'll be safe even in the winter. So we're basically now going to have four camps. If there's threats of the police coming in, we have, they are prepared and they will roadblock, just like they did just a short time ago. Police were trying to come in and pull the people out of camp. We set up our roadblocks and held them back, and we still have the camp as of this time. So. Mm.
And what, I mean, do you see the, I just worry so much thinking about this and seeing how militarized police forces are around the country, seeing the use of drones for surveillance and everything, and I've heard, you know, rumors about more than that, and I know the National Guard at some point was somewhat involved, but now isn't, to my knowledge. But I worry about police escalation, and is the solution to that just more and more people, more eyes and more bodies? And
yeah, we need as many people there as possible. Actually, when the police were originally holding the blockade to make it harder for us to get in, they were actually worse. When the National Guard came in and took over the blockade, it became actually easier to get to Bismarck and back, because they were a bunch of young guys that I think were just glad they weren't in Iraq or Afghanistan. And they would just say, have you been here recently? And I'd say, you know, yeah. They go, well, just take it slow when you get down near the camp. But the police, they're a whole different story. It seems to be the police officers. So far, we haven't had any problems, or I haven't experienced any problems with the National Guard. They seem to be friendly, and they'll let you on past. They seem to understand what's going on.
So the police who are there, so in the video that I saw, so this is, there's a totally separate incident that Jacob Johns talked about that he was present for with the dogs.
Yeah.
When the private security let dogs on people and was using the same mace that you're describing the police having, the kind of fire extinguisher style broad use mace, which is like horrific to me that that exists, let alone that it would be, you know, used on a crowd with children in it and elders and everyone. But so the police who are there now were not because of the temporary order. They weren't there for a while, and that's when the private security was there. The police who are there now, are they, I mean, are they like county sheriffs from this area? Are they the town police from Mandan and the other adjacent towns?
Well, it's a Mandan County Sheriff from the city of Mandan, Bismarck, Fargo, Washburn. They're from cities all over North Dakota. I'm wondering who's actually looking out for the towns that unless there's just so many of them, and yet as many as they can turn out, they can't. So far, have not been able to match our numbers, but that's why they have to use the violence to try and control us. It's like when you see people, you know, holding a prayer and then suddenly being maced. You know, it's just you imagine, you know, would they do that to a white church? Would they go in some white Christian church and mace everybody for praying?
Sure. And I know, and those are areas with really high racial tension historically.
Yeah.
And so it's, and maybe that's a reason for more people like you, more white allies, to show up and kind of maybe help bust this narrative that these small town cops might have, that it's these troublesome native people, whatever their
and
their feelings are.
The
about
local
it.
Press, if you can get stories out of the newspaper, they just try and say, well, it's just the Native Americans and a bunch of paid professional protesters, and it's like,
as if that's a thing. If that was like a thing, I know some people who would sign up.
I haven't been paid for anything. I do this, I'm going broke going back there. It's like I've lost a lot of time off of work. I have no idea how I'm even going to pay my bills this month, but it's too important to not go back. This is basically history in the making. We're changing the way things are going to be done, and we're going to keep fighting until we've won, and we're not going to let them push us off.
So if people are listening to this and now they're getting ready to drop everything and head out, what should people bring? What should people not bring?
Bring your best winter gear. It's like your best, your heaviest tents. Anything that will keep you warm, because it is going to get rather difficult in the winter. But I know a lot of people that I met two young men who just who got arrested on Saturday. I met them after they got out of jail. They had showed up and were only planning on being there for 4 days. After their arrests, they decided they're staying. They're not going home. I've met a lot of people like that. A professor from a college in Missouri, I can't remember what town he was from, but he had just been asked by a couple friends to go out there, so he intended to go out with them for a couple days. After 2 days, he called and resigned his position as a professor because he realized he needed to stay. So a lot of people intended to only be there for a short period of time, but they're staying on. It changes you when you get there. Mm-hmm. So,
and if people can't go this second, if people assess in their own lives that they can't go right now, how can they support?
Because I don't do things online. I guess you could try and send money to the legal defense fund that the Standing Rock Sioux Nation has set up, because they're going to be needing more, because we had a lot of arrests last Saturday. There's also the Sacred Stone Camp. I always screw up on the name on that, but I'm always trying to call it Stone Spirit Camp or something like that. But their money stays just within their camp. They're working on, I don't know if they finished yet, because the last 5 days I was there was so intense I never got a chance to talk to anybody about it. But they are trying to set up their own 501c3 for the main camp, which will be the north camp that's holding down the piece of land where the pipeline's supposed to go through. But I haven't heard if they've gotten that set up yet. They were working on it, and that will support the main camp.
But in terms of, you're going back and forth, it sounds. Yeah. Probably just coming forth to put your life in order and everything. I know Jacob Johns and Jeff Ferguson have gone, and I know Jacob's going to go again.
Yeah.
I can keep posting links to, because I do internet pretty often. Yeah. I'll post links to the two sites you just mentioned, and also help put people in touch with the right folks who are going. If you want to send gear, if you want to send really nice Sub-Zero sleeping bags and things like that, you can email me at praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, at KYRS.org, or you can go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/praxisradio, P-R-A-X-I-S-R-A-D-I-O. So is there anything else you want to share? Is there a final story? Anything like that?
There's been so many stories. that's the amazing thing of being there. You meet so many wonderful people from around the world. I met people from so many different countries. I tried listing them once, and it just goes on and on, because pretty much every state in the U.S., including Hawaii and Alaska, pretty much every province of Canada, Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Brazil, Peru, Australia, Philippines, most European countries, Israel, Iraq, Iran.
Wow.
It's like we got people who, in their own part of the world, they're pretty much enemies, and they're here, they're all working together for the same cause, to be allies with the Lakota Nation. It's if you're able to make it, it will change you.
Wow. And do you think this event, I mean, you said history in the making, and I think it's been really powerful to watch and hear about from people who have been there. What do you think the ultimate outcome of this gathering that's unprecedented is going to be?
I'm hoping it's going to change the way the world works. It has that feeling when you're there, because you just see how well all the people work together. I remember when I was involved with Occupy, and it was always just the opposite. It was just egos here and egos there, and tore it apart. And this, that doesn't happen. It's everybody works together for whatever's needed. You can just be, a call comes out over the microphone. We need people to do this, and it's like, we need 5 people to help unload this truck, and 20 people show up in 30 seconds. It's like, and then if you're the 20th one to show up and you're not needed, you just go find something else to do. But it's an amazing community that's been created there, and even the people I haven't met, I know I'd be friends with them. I eventually meet them, and you have wonderful conversations. It's great to be up before sunrise and hang out with the people at the waiting for the morning prayers for sunrise, and the water ceremonies they have. The women do the water ceremonies, and we walk down to the river. I can't say enough good about the camp and the people there.
Well, I'm so glad you've gone, and so glad that you want to share what you've heard, and hopefully will spur other people to put their thumb up and go with you. Pitch in for gas with you, it sounds like, is a need. So, yeah. Do you have anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's probably it for now.
Okay. So. Well, thanks so much, Ziggy. And again, all of those links to everything you've just heard are in the podcast notes right below the player that you're likely looking at right now. If you're not looking at it for some reason, you can go to soundcloud.com/praxisradio or my Facebook page at facebook.com/praxisradio to find all that information. You've been listening to a special Praxis podcast only episode with Ziggy talking about Standing Rock, the resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation and what is needed right now. So check that out. And thanks again for being with me today.
Thank you.